morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Today is February 11th, 2026. It's Jobs Day. And we suspected that this jobs report was going to be a mess. And we warned about this earlier this week. The annual benchmark revisions were due. And this report did not disappoint. It was nothing like anybody was expecting. I should take that back. It was somewhat like some people were expecting, but the headline numbers were a lot better than people were expecting. So we'll start with the good. We're going to take optimism for a test drive this morning. Let me know how we do. January's non-farm payrolls came in at 130,000. That is way better than the 55,000 the market was expecting. We added a lot of jobs in January. Where? I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine, but that's what the numbers say. We also had some downward revisions to the December jobs numbers, negative by 2,000. The November numbers revised lower by 15,000. So you can take 17 grand off of that 130,000 headline number. It's still a beat, right? Unemployment rate fell to 4.3%, down from 4.4% last month. In particular, the U6 unemployment, which a lot of people say is a much better measure of the unemployment, that fell to 8.0%, down from 8.4 last month and 8.7 the month before that. So, I mean, hey, participation rate up a tick. You know, all these numbers look pretty good for January. That's the good side, all right? That was optimistic Jack, all right? Now back to your regularly scheduled doom and gloom. We got the annual benchmark revisions to the 2025 jobs numbers. That just came in. All right, now, just so you guys know, this is something that's normally done every year. What they do is they take the previously reported numbers, which are done by survey. They call businesses. How many people did you hire and fire? They call people. How many people in your house are working or not working? All right, that's how they do the typical monthly non-farm payrolls. And then once a year, they take those reported figures and they measure them against the state unemployment information. And then they revise the previous numbers. All right. They did that this for 2025, and we saw a negative 898,000 jobs just revised away that were previously reported as jobs gained in the U.S. economy. All right. So, you know, like we just reported the 130,000 for the month of January. We had all those monthly reports all last year, and then we piled them all up. We figured out what the error was, and okay, 898,000 of those jobs never happened. They didn't exist to begin with. That's pretty big. It's not as big as last year's. Last year was 911,000, but it's like right there. Almost a million jobs that were previously reported never happened. All right. And look, I catch a lot of flack on this channel because I tend to have somewhat of a pessimistic view of things. That's just my nuclear training. I am programmed to see the worst in every situation. That's how nukes stave off disaster. And well, I can't help but see the negative here. It's almost like these government numbers are full of shit, isn't it? I mean, year in and year out, we downwardly revise them into oblivion. I'm beginning to see a pattern here. Anybody else? All right. So what was your actual jobs gained in 2025? 181,000 for the whole freaking year. Now, keep in mind, we have had some months where they claim 180,000 jobs created. Oh, my God, the market rallies, the economy stronger. And Jerome Powell talks about strength and resiliency in the labor market shows that we are well on our way to achieving our dual mandate of price stability and maximum employment. Yeah, those jobs never existed. Once again, every month they feed us these jobs reports, and we report the data because that's what we do here. You know, we report the news, we investigate, we pry, we dig, and, you know, I have a nose for bullshit and an eye for detail and a big mouth, hence my YouTube channel. I can't help but notice they just keep revising these jobs away. It's almost like the economy hasn't been strong and resilient this whole freaking time. Oh boy. So where were the jobs gained? The jobs were gained, no surprises. Healthcare, social assistance, and construction. Those are the categories that saw jobs added. All right, healthcare, aging population, no surprise there. Social assistance. Our families are falling apart and we need therapists and social workers to figure out what to do with the kids when that happens. Okay, that's great. And we've got construction, the world's biggest accounting fraud in history, and the overbuild of data centers, which will probably be axe throwing in craft breweries 3 years from now. Yeah, we're still spending buku bucks building that. All this fake crap in the economy is doing really well. We lost jobs in government, another month of five-digit losses in government employment. A lot of the people who took the voluntary separation agreements in 2025, they're finally ticking off the payroll as their severance runs out. And we also lost jobs in finance. Also, there were some caveats attached to this jobs report. Normally, we dig in and we look at like the multiple job holders and the full-time versus the part-time. Number one, we didn't have time to do that this morning because I had all of like 10 minutes to study this report before having to hit the go live button. But also there was a caveat in there that said the response rates for the household survey for this month were unusually low, and therefore you shouldn't put too much stock in those numbers anyway. All the multiple job holders and everything that's usually found in the household survey. And because of the severe weather in January, they're saying, I don't know, because snow, people didn't pick up the phone. Don't shoot me, guys. I'm just reporting what the BLS is telling us. So we're not going to put too much stock in the household numbers for this month. Next month, we will, however, be digging into that. So look, the jobs report, by some measures, better than expected, but by most measures, as bad as we feared. The market is still digesting this. We'll see what the numbers are doing. There was, of course, like every jobs report, initially a big spike. We pair those gains, and then we see where things settle out. Other news going on this morning. What the hell is going on in El Paso, Texas right now? That is the question. Nobody knows. Everybody is speculating. Here is the facts. The government has shut down the airspace over the city of El Paso for 10 days. That we know. And, you know, the statement goes out that usually they basically say, for safety's sake, we're shutting down the airspace because we can't guarantee we won't shoot down planes over El Paso for the next 10 days. Why? Why is the question? Are we going to bomb Mexican drug cartels and across the border in Juarez? And we're worried about shooting down commercial airliners while that's going on? Are the Mexican cartels going to bomb us? And we're worried about shooting down commercial airlines? Are they trying to contain something? Now we're just speculating. I don't know. All I know is the government took the unusual step for 10 days to shut down all airspace over El Paso, Texas, which includes first responder vehicles, by the way. Like, you know, if someone's in a car accident, they need to be airlifted for the hospital. No helicopters are flying. They don't make this decision lightly, I guess is what I'm saying. And right now we just don't have a lot of information. So that's going on this morning. That's fun, as long as you're not stuck in El Paso like a million people are. We've got Kraft Heinz has canceled their breakup. Okay, those kids are getting along better now. They're going to give love another shot over at Kraft Heinz. We previously reported that the company was exploring splitting into two. New CEO came in, said, nope, not going to do that. Ford earnings out yesterday after the bell. Big miss on profits. Ford lost $8 billion last year for the whole year 2025. Almost all of that due to the losses in their overbuild of electric vehicles. Nobody saw that coming. And also tariffs took a big chunk out of Ford's profits as well. We've got U.S. consumer delinquencies are rising in every category. That is according to the New York Fed in their quarterly report of household debt and credit. Mortgage delinquencies rising, credit card delinquencies rising, student loans, auto loans, delinquencies rising across the board. The K-shaped economy, the bifurcated economy, the bottom 90% not doing well, and you can see it in particular, young people not doing well with their debts here. It's almost like we've been in a recession the whole time. See also earlier commentary about the jobs report and the labor market. We've got more drama with Nexperia, that Chinese Dutch chip maker for the auto sector, that story that just won't die. Dutch court has ordered a probe into Nexperia now. So, you know, a couple of months ago, they were kind of like, yeah, everybody, don't worry. We cut a deal with the Chinese and everything's going to be just fine. And don't fret over the availability of chips for things like power windows and power door locks and cars that can slow down auto production. And the whole global auto industry is already on the ropes. No, we fixed that problem. And then we find out, no, they didn't fix that problem. They're still fighting over Nexperia. That's going on this morning. The world's biggest nickel mine in Indonesia is cutting output. And when I say cutting output, I don't mean they're trimming it. I mean they are like chopping its head off. 70% reduction in output from the world's biggest nickel mine in Indonesia. Nickel's primary function is for making stainless steel. You better believe that's got a lot to do with the slowdown in construction in China and the collapse of the Chinese housing market, where they're curtailing production of everything else in China. And speaking of curtailed production, the Chinese auto sales took a big hit in January, falling at their fastest rate in 2 years. See earlier commentary about the nickel mine slowing down their output. Guys, there is a lot going on in the world today. We are going to try to get through this in a reasonable time. But how about we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance this morning. Don't forget that like button. You new guys, hit that subscribe button right next to it so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every day. That is fuel for the financial fire. That is good wake-up juice this morning. Look at the S&P 500. It is higher by 40 points, 0.58%. Almost all of those gains coming in the aftermath of the release of the jobs report. Now, look, usually you got to wait a little while. You've got to let the market digest this data. You got to let the algorithms arm wrestle, and then the market figures out where it wants to go. So this is just my initial reaction to the market's initial reaction. Who knows where we're going to be by the close of the day? But I would say the market right now is saying, oh, goody, the job market sucks. Everybody's poor. That means my Fed rate cuts are coming. The Fed is going to zirp and burr and send my stocks to the moon. That is what the S&P 500 is telling me right now. The Dow, same thing, up 233 points, 0.48% higher, all of which came in the immediate aftermath of that non-farm payrolls report and the big downward benchmark revisions. And the NASDAQ is up 0.8%, 206 points higher for the tech-heavy NASDAQ. Stocks are up across the board on this news this morning. The U.S. dollar, this is kind of interesting. It was weaker for most of the morning. And then we got a big gap up on the jobs report. The dollar strengthened substantially. Now, that's kind of interesting to see the dollar strengthen. This is the one data point that's not making a lot of sense. If you're expecting the Fed to start cutting rates and easing and zirp and burr, why would the dollar be strengthening on this news? Yet there it is. Maybe some worries about, worries about debt delinquencies. Who knows? Pardon me for just one. Yeah, that's going on this morning. Sorry, we just had a little message coming from off the cuff. I was told to look at my phone. Give me just, okay, this is interesting. NOTAM lifted. I'm getting this message from Mish. Okay, we'll read this. We'll read this when we get to that article. Sorry, guys. I had a little thing in my ear there. All right, so the dollar. I'm a little surprised to see the dollar strengthening on this news here. Possible worries about debt delinquencies causing a dollar shortage maybe, and that's why the dollar strengthened. But the whole market looks at this jobs report and says, Fed go burr. You'd expect the dollar to weaken in that situation. Now, those gains are being paired right now. Dollar is now just barely flat for the day. All right, sorry. I had things going on in my ear there, kind of butchered my Dixie narrative. Also, looking at the bond market this morning, yields a little bit higher. If we're expecting the Fed to go zirp and burr, you don't really see it. I guess you could say a little bit of the bump in the middle of the rate curve, the yield curve here this morning. Maybe some people saying if the Fed cuts, it's going to spike inflation. Therefore, I want a higher rate. The Fed only cuts. They only affect the short end of the yield curve. You do have a little bit of red there on the 1 month. But again, the market is still digesting these jobs numbers here. The 30-year yield, 4.823%, higher by 3.5 points. The 10-year, 4.189, higher by almost 4.5 points. The 2 year is up almost 7 points at 3.522%. And the 1 month is negative half a point, 3.685. Again, if this isn't really screaming rate cuts, you'd see the 1 month moving a little bit further down on that news. Maybe I could explain the long end of the curve rising on the rate cuts if people were worried about inflation expectations. Now, metals are definitely telling us Fed rate cuts, Fed go burr. We've got gold is higher by $53 this morning, $5,078 for spot gold. That's higher by 1%. We did hit an intra-morning high of 51. We'll say 51.20 for spot gold. April COMEX futures at 51.01. That's higher by $70.61, 1.4% higher. Silver had a quiet day, and now that's over. We're back to these $5 intraday swings in silver, $85.23 for spot. That is higher by $4.43, or 5.5% higher this morning. March COMEX silver futures, 85.04, higher by 4.65, or 5.81%. I like the shiny metals are saying the Fed is going to cut, the Fed is going to ease here. Maybe a little bit of safe haven demand as well. Copper is higher by 1.6%. Platinum higher by 3.7%. Palladium is up by 3.2%. Crude oil is up 2.8%. $1.80 higher for crude oil at $65.76. That's interesting. If you're worried about a recession, you think oil would be lower, and it's not. That is for the March WTI futures. So some interesting things happening as the market digests this news this morning. Let's see what's going on in Bitcoin. Bitcoin not really reacting very much to the Fed's news here. 68,275. Let's change this to, say, 5-minute candles. Let's see. Okay. Bitcoin is reacting a little bit to the Fed news here. We were about 66.8. Where were we at 8:30? At 8:30, we were 66,000, just under 67,000. Now we're at 68 and change. So Bitcoin gained about a grand on the jobs report here. Still taking time to digest this. Now let's look at the actual jobs report. This is what came out today from the BLS. Total non-farm payroll employment rose by 130,000 in January. And the unemployment rate changed little at 4.3%. Yada, yada. Let's skip all of this junk here. Let's get down to the good stuff. Total non-farm payroll employment rose by 130,000 in January. Job gains occurred in healthcare, social assistance, and construction. While federal government and financial activities lost jobs, payroll employment changed little in 2025, plus 15,000 per month on average. Whoa. There's those downward revisions there. See table B1. And the note at the end of this release about the annual benchmark process. That's the big takeaway from this report. We only gained 15,000 jobs a month on average in 2025. Now think about, go all the way back to all 12 of those jobs reports streams that we did over 2025. There was two that we didn't have because of the government shutdown. Imagine if they had only reported 15,000 jobs gained, what the stock market would have done all those months, what the yield curve would have done, what Bitcoin and gold and silver. You think maybe the market would have reacted differently if they had reported 15,000 jobs a month instead of the 100 and change that they actually did report? But, you know, when they revise things downward a year later, they don't really get much fanfare. Healthcare added 82,000 jobs in January with gains in ambulatory healthcare services and hospitals, nursing and residential care. All right, we have a lot of old people in this country. More healthcare jobs. Averaged 33,000 per month in 2025. Employment and social assistance increased by 42,000 in January, primarily individual and family services. Construction added 33,000 in January, reflecting employment gain in non-residential specialty trade contractors, read as data center construction, gave us construction jobs in January. Also in January, the federal government employment continued to decline by 34,000 as some federal employees who accepted deferred resignation in 2025 dropped off of payrolls. So that's what drove the beat. Here we can see the jobs added for the month of January, 130,000. Now they haven't, have they revised? Let's refresh this. Okay, they did revise downward the prior 2 months. So we've got 130,000 for January. December dropped to 48,000 after that 2,000 downward revision. November dropped to 41,000 after that 15,000 downward revision. Now, those two downward revisions are not part of the annual benchmark revision process that revised all of these numbers down to virtually nothing for the year. Looking over at the unemployment rate, we saw it dropped to 4.3% for the month of January, down from 4.4% in December and 4.5% in November. So unemployment is trending down, if you can believe that, which I have a hard time believing. Meanwhile, the U6 unemployment rate, that is also trending down sharply, 8.0% from 8.4% and 8.7% in November before that. Now, U6 is a better measure. It measures both unemployment and underemployment. It captures more people. The unemployment rate doesn't capture everybody. There's a lot of asterisks to that data point. I have to say, guys, I seriously doubt the labor market has really improved in the last 3 months as much as this data is telling us it has. I can't help but wave my bullshit flag when I see that. I mean, talk to anybody who's out there looking for a job. Talk to anybody who's in HR and hiring people, anybody who analyzes the labor data. Does it support this decline in U6 labor? The answer is unequivocally no, it doesn't. I have to question this number. This one just doesn't pass the sniff test. Also, we got labor force participation rate slightly changed here, 62.5% up from 62.4. We've been bouncing around this level for several months here, so I won't put too much time into participation rate. All right. Now, here's the story that delayed me when we were talking about the dollar before. I got a couple of messages here. FAA closes El Paso airspace for special security reason. Now, this was the first story I saw when I woke up this morning, and the FAA closed the airspace around the border city of El Paso for 10 days in an unusual move that authorities put down to unspecified special security reasons. Now, there was a lot of information going around. None of the local government in El Paso had any advance notice. Nobody knew this was coming. Now, I did just get a couple of text messages from Mish right as I hit the go live button that they lifted the notice in El Paso and that they shot down drones. I don't have anything resembling that. If anybody knows, let me know in the comments if you know more about that. But that this restriction has been lifted. I don't know the source of this information about the drone being shot down or anything, but one of my guesses when I first saw this story, I was saying, okay, either we're about to bomb the cartels or the cartels are about to bomb us. And I thought maybe this involves drones. Apparently it did. That's all we have, guys. Really hard to get information about this story here. WTF is going on in El Paso this morning. Hope everybody is safe. I don't know. Wear a helmet if you're in El Paso, Texas today. It's all I got, guys. I get that a lot. What does this mean for me? It means wear a helmet if you live in El Paso this morning. All right. Also going on this morning, new Kraft Heinz CEO pauses split to first improve results. We initially reported that Kraft Heinz was going to split up the company, and it looks like that plan has fallen by the wayside. Kraft Heinz is pausing work on its planned separation as new CEO Steve, how do you say this? Callahan? Steve C works to improve the results. My number one priority is returning the business to profitable growth, which will require ensuring all resources are fully focused on the execution of our operating plan, said Mr. C on Wednesday in a press release that also reported earnings. As a result, we believe it is prudent to pause work related to the separation, and we will no longer incur related dyssynergies this year. Shares of Kraft Heinz were falling in pre-market trading on Wednesday. Last year, Kraft Heinz said it planned to split into two companies to separate its fastest-growing brands, including condiments such as Heinz ketchup and box meals, from its slower-growing grocery staples such as Oscar Mayer deli meats and Lunchables. The company had said previously it expected to complete the split in the second half of this year. But Mr. C, who took over the top role on January 1st, said he has found that the company's challenges are fixable and within our control. Instead of proceeding with the split at this time, the company will invest $600 million in marketing, research and development, and select pricing, he said. Now, investing $600 million, marketing and research and development, okay, I get that. Select pricing, that tells me they're gonna lower prices to try to jumpstart sales. We saw something similar from Coke and Pepsi in their earnings. Inflation is taking its toll at the grocery store. People are spending less on the upper shelf items. And the solution to higher prices is higher prices. So it looks like Kraft Heinz is going to lower some of their prices to try to regain some of those sales. Now, typically when companies split up, the two daughter companies are worth more than the parent company was combined. And so the market is not reacting favorably to this news. The stock is down 5.9% ahead of the opening bell, trading at $23.47, off by $1.48. Over the last year, this company has lost about 14%, adding to those losses this morning. Meanwhile, Ford reports Q4 profit miss, an $8 billion net loss for the year as EV unit losses hit results. Now, those EV losses, that is the majority of Ford's electric vehicle losses, but there are still more to come in future quarters. They talked about this a couple of weeks ago when they preliminarily released that they were going to take something like a $12 billion hit related to their overbuild of electric vehicles. Ford reported fourth quarter results Tuesday after the bell that missed expectations, with charges stemming from its EV business resulting in a net loss for the quarter and for the year. Ford reported Q4 automotive revenue of $42.4 billion, which was exactly in line with expectations, with adjusted earnings per share of 13 cents versus 19 cents expected on an adjusted basis of 1 billion versus 1.16 billion. But Ford posted a fourth quarter and full year net loss of $11.1 billion and $8.2 billion respectively, which reflected the impact of special items, the company said. Yeah, when you adjust away the $12 billion we lost in electric vehicles, we had a great quarter. But when you unadjust that $12 billion you burned on electric vehicles, and Ford had a lousy quarter and a lousy year. For the full year, adjusted earnings before interest and taxes of $6.8 billion came in near its forecast of around $7, but missed estimates for $8.86 billion. Adjusted free cash flow came in at $3.5 billion for the year at the midpoint of Ford's projection. Ford said it would have had full-year EBIT in the mid-$7 billion range if not for the change the White House communicated to Ford regarding tariff offsets in December, which ended up adding $900 million more in tariff costs. So there was a tariff hit as well here. Last December, Ford reported a $19.5 billion charge due to a pivot in its electric vehicle business. The majority of the special items would be recognized in the fourth quarter. There's that $12.5 billion loss, with the balance of $7 billion hitting in 26 and 27. So we've still got $7 billion of losses that will be spread out over the next eight quarters due to this electric vehicle mishap at Ford that every vehicle maker, because everybody just, I don't know, everybody went full Kathy Wood in 2021 with electric vehicles. Never go full Kathy Wood. Ford's Model EV unit reported a $4.8 billion EBIT loss for the year, though it was an improvement over 2024 by 299 basis points. Yeah, we lost almost $5 billion last year on EVs, and that's a lot better than the year before that. Holy shit, were these guys losing money on these things. Ford CFO Sherry Howe said in a call with reporters that the pathway to EV profitability likely won't happen until 2029, after I probably leave this job, when the company has its EV products from Renault on sale in Europe, and its universal EV platform vehicles are on sale in the market. So Ford actually not doing that bad this morning here. The opening bell has rung. The stock is actually up 2 cents. Why? Because they already announced, oh, there we go. Now it's heading lower. But they already announced most of this loss ahead of time, so the market already had time to digest this news. Over the last year, Ford has had a fantastic year, up 46.8%. How? I don't know. They lost billions of dollars, but the stock is up. It's the 2020s. I guess we should just move on. Meanwhile, U.S. consumer delinquencies jumped to their highest in almost a decade. This story broke yesterday, and oh my God, talk about the bifurcated economy, the K-shaped economy. This article is just full of goodies. And when I say goodies, I mean horrible numbers that reflect the reality of the economy as opposed to what the talking heads on CNBC will tell you. Delinquency rate on loans ranging from mortgages to credit cards rose to 4.8% of all outstanding U.S. household debt in the fourth quarter, the highest level since 2017, driven by higher defaults among low-income and young borrowers. No surprise there. The bottom K is not doing very well, predominantly made up of low-income and young borrowers. While the overall share of loans in some stage of default is near pre-pandemic averages, the rise in delinquencies among the lowest earners adds to evidence of an increasingly bifurcated economy. Data from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York's quarterly report on household debt and credit released on Tuesday showed the rise in defaults was driven by delinquencies in mortgage payments. Oh, that's good. And New York Fed researchers found that they were particularly high in lower income zip codes. That's not terribly surprising. Student loan delinquencies, which have surged following a pause in payment requirements during the pandemic, also contributed to the rise in defaults. Now, that's interesting. The primary driver here is delinquencies in mortgages. That is a very bad sign. The mortgage is the last thing you want to be late on. As household debt levels grew modestly, mortgage delinquencies continue to increase, said Wilbert Vanderclaw, an economic research advisor at the New York Fed, who has a name that sounds an awful lot like a Marvel villain. Or is it Vanderclaw? I don't know. Let's move on, shall we? Delinquency rates for mortgages are near historically normal levels, but the deterioration is concentrated in lower income areas and in areas with declining home prices. All right, so the delinquencies are rising in the areas where the prices are falling, particular lower income. Overall household debt balances climbed 1% from the previous quarter to $18.8 trillion. The share of credit card loans that were at least 90 days delinquent rose to 12.7%, the most since the first quarter of 2011. That's terrible. 90 days delinquent. You haven't made a payment in 3 months. That is 12.7% of all credit cards have not made a payment in 3 months. Yikes. The share of auto loans that are seriously delinquent 3 months or more climbed to 5.2%, just shy of the record reached in 2010. That number is artificially low because we've heard from a lot of people like Locks Ganapathy about how they're doing extend and pretend in auto loans, and Carvana's off doing whatever the hell Carvana is doing to hide their delinquencies. But in some cases, these car loans are being extended to 10 years. 10 years for a car loan, for a car that'll be lucky to last 10 years. Oh, that's gonna be great. And still, delinquencies are 5.2%. Take away those loan modifications, and it's probably going to be right up there with the credit card numbers. The increased struggle in low-income and young borrowers' ability to pay their loans is consistent with elevated unemployment rates among some parts of the population. The jobless rates for workers 16 to 24-year-olds stood at 10.4% in December, near the highest level since the depths of the pandemic in 2021. The young people are getting the short end of the stick in every possible way here. This sucks. This endless pump, extend and pretend, zerp and burr disproportionately hurts the young and the poor. When will the politicians get this message? I don't know, but they're doing nothing to stop it. Some 16.3% of student loan debt became delinquent in the fourth quarter, the biggest increase on record in data going back to 2004. That number is only going to grow as there is a substantial number of people who just think they should never have to pay that back. Why? I don't know. They borrowed it, but they don't think they should have to pay it back. Must be nice. That number is only going to go up. And look, see also the 10.4% unemployment among 16 to 24-year-olds. They're six figures in debt for a college degree that's not getting them a job. They're not going to make their loan payments. It's not surprising. Terrible numbers here for this delinquency report. Meanwhile, we've got Nexperia feud extended as court orders probe into the chip maker. All right, this one's pretty interesting. Let's not spend too much time on it. We thought this story was dead, and it's not. A Dutch court ordered an investigation into chipmaker Nexperia, deepening a legal dispute that wrested control away from Chinese owner Wingtech and triggered supply disruptions across industries. Along with opening the probe, the Enterprise Chamber of the Amsterdam Court of Appeal on Wednesday upheld measures including freezing Wingtech's voting rights, appointing a trustee to oversee the Nijmegen-based company, and suspending Wingtech's founder, some guy I can't pronounce, as Nexperia's chief executive officer. The ruling is a win for Nexperia's European management, which filed a petition with the court accusing Zhang of pushing for technology transfers that would have hobbled the chipmaker. Wingtech has disputed those claims and said its loss of control is damaging Nexperia. You can expect more stories about disruption in chips in the auto sector affecting Europe and Japan and the U.S., in retaliation to this one. This story just won't go away. Meanwhile, the world's biggest nickel mine in Indonesia is told to cut their output. You better believe this is a China housing story right here, even though it's talking about an Indonesian nickel mine. The world's biggest nickel mine in Indonesia has been told to slash output as authorities step up efforts to boost global prices of the battery metal. PT Weda Bay Nickel has been notified it will receive 12 million tons of ore production quota this year, down from 42 million tons in 2025, according to people familiar with the matter. Nickel futures jumped in London following the news. The mine on the island of something I can't pronounce in some province I probably can't pronounce is owned by some company I can't pronounce. Okay, maybe we should just skip this paragraph entirely. In a statement on Wednesday, Eramet confirmed the size of the reduction in Weda Bay Nickel's quota and said that the company intends to apply for a revision. Indonesia has been taking drastic steps to revive prices of its biggest export commodity, largely through scaling back volumes that key mines are allowed to produce. Ahead of the latest round of cutbacks, supply from the Southeast Asian country had surged to about 65% of world production, sending prices into a two-year plunge that shuttered rivals in Australia and New Caledonia. Now, the big thing here, guys, look at this decline to 12 million tons, down from 42 million tons, a 70% curtailment of output. Now, they're talking a lot about the battery metal here. I think that's misleading. Yes, nickel is used in batteries, but nickel is also predominantly used to make stainless steel. That's the main use of nickel worldwide. And you better believe this has to do with curtailment in China. The Chinese are building fewer buildings, fewer cities that nobody wants to live in, And they're also curtailing their electric vehicle production after years of overcapacity. And I guess, yeah, if you factor in the story about Ford and all, you know, Stellantis took a big hit related to EVs. Everybody around the world is cutting back their EV production. So, yeah, I'm sure that's contributing also to the decline in nickel prices here. And case in point, you got this story in Nikkei Asia. China's January auto sales fall at the fastest pace in nearly 2 years. New energy vehicles hit by dampened demand as BYD fares particularly badly. China's car sales in January fell at the fastest pace in nearly 2 years as competition steepens in the cutthroat market, where automakers are grappling with fading government subsidies, softening demand, and tighter regulation. Sales at home dropped 19.5% from a year earlier to 1.4 million vehicles, the biggest fall since February of 2024, data from the China Association of Automobile Manufacturers showed on Wednesday. A 19.5% decline in car sales. That is catastrophic for the Chinese economy. Again, the Chinese economy is so much worse than people can possibly imagine because of what's happened in the housing market. And when people lose value in their homes, when their homes go down, it's called the wealth effect. They feel poorer and they spend less money and they shop less and they buy fewer cars. And this is why everybody's like Chinese electric vehicles are taking over the world, because the Chinese are dumping these vehicles that they're making at a loss into any market that will buy them because nobody will buy them at home. And the Chinese government has been trying to crack down on this overproduction because it's killing prices and causing deflation, which the Chinese are trying to fight. It's not that these Chinese electric vehicles are so great. It's that the companies that are making them are losing money and dumping them anywhere that they can. And, well, a lot of countries are getting defensive and putting tariffs on these cars to protect their own domestic industries. Retail sales of electric cars and plug-in hybrids, a sector known as new energy vehicles, which had previously been outpacing the overall market, fell by 22.9% last month. Wide fluctuations in China's car sales in the first 2 months of the year are common due to the shifting timing of the week-long Lunar New Year and are often made beforehand. This year, the holiday begins in mid-February versus in late January last year, underscoring the depth of the poor market conditions at the start of the year. I think they're saying here that the Lunar New Year actually makes this worse, and that the data, if the Lunar New Year fell in the same week, the data would be even worse than they're reporting here. I'm not entirely sure that's what they're trying to say in that paragraph, but I'm pretty sure that's what they're telling us. Chinese electric vehicle champion BYD sales were particularly hit hard in January, falling 30% worse than the industry average. Automakers in China jostling to lure frugal customers strained by a prolonged housing downturn and a weak job market are extending repayment terms to as long as 8 years. And I saw that paragraph. I was like, hey, that's not bad. I mean, Carvana and CarMax are extending their loans out to 10 years. So 8 years isn't all that bad. Maybe the Chinese auto market is even better than ours is. I think either way, it's safe to say globally, the auto market is rather doo-doo at the moment. As case in point, the Ford earnings and electric vehicles and BYD and these Chinese numbers, just not a good time to be selling electric vehicles. And I just want to say thank you very much to Travis. Travis is poking Armando again this morning. They're doing their race to be first. Hey, Travis, from Real Estate Mindset, you bonkers SOBU. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Check out Real Estate Mindset while you're here, everybody. And hey, Nashville Pasta Man says, are those jobs in the room with us now? Fascinating. Tell me, what were you feeling when you read those jobs numbers, Pasta Man? How did that make you feel? Did that strike at your core values, sir? Yes, that's Therapist Jack. Look, the jobs numbers, the 130,000 that they just reported, they're going to get revised down next month. They're going to get revised down the month after that. And then a year from now, they're going to get revised down again. The revisions are always in the same direction. Anybody else notice that? When the error distribution is always in one direction, it means it's not an error. It means there's a problem with the way you're measuring the data, or the people measuring it are biased, one or the other. We rarely see an upward revision, do we? Interesting. Yeah, these jobs, are they in the room with us now? Thank you, Pasta Man, for the laugh this morning, sir. Spacecraft with a K says, Bureau of Laughable Statistics. Happy Wednesday. I agree. Look, guys, the jobs numbers, they are what they are. And I get these comments every time we talk about inflation, every time we talk about jobs or GDP. Everybody says, how can you report the government numbers? If you believe these numbers, you're crazy. But look, the numbers are what they are. It's the only data we have, and we have to report them. And these numbers move markets. whether right or wrong, the market's going to react to these numbers. So I got to give you the numbers that are given to me. Don't shoot the messenger. But yes, laughable statistics. I agree. Thank you, Spacecraft, for supporting the channel. Richard Bell says depreciation, old versus new tech, epic crash coming. You know, let's talk about Google yesterday, since we're talking about depreciation. Google just issued a 100-year bond to buy chips that are going to last for 5 years. All right, so you've got 5 years to make money on these chips before they're essentially worthless. They start breaking down. And I'm sure the CoreWeave guy is like, oh, our customers are happy to buy these out to 6, 7, or 8 years. Yeah, CoreWeave, your customers are the same a-holes that sold you the chips to begin with. That's not real numbers. Thank you. That being said, borrowing money for 100 years to buy an asset that's going to last for five that doesn't yet make a profit, you've got 5 years to turn that ship around and make all the profit you need to actually make money and service your debt for the next 95 years after that and pay back your principal. The math ain't mathin' here. I agree, Richard Bell. And look, all this CapEx that you're seeing spent right now, all this money that's spent on chips and the $165 billion, we're raising our CapEx to $200 billion. All this stuff they're buying has to be depreciated later on, which means all these magnificent CapEx numbers are going to turn into negative numbers in their earnings when they depreciate all these assets away to zero over the next 4 to 6 years. Realistically, over the next 2 to 6 years. And so that's basically the gist of Michael Burry's short thesis on NVIDIA and all of big tech. I mean, we are entering a hyperscaler winter, a big tech winter. For years, these companies will see their earnings destroyed by this CapEx spending that gets depreciated away and the gains just never materialize. To borrow from our friend Pasta Man and his earlier comment, are these AI profits in the room with us now? Thank you very much, Richard Bell, sir. Appreciate the super chat and the support of the channel. Good point on depreciation. And Mr. 4P says, do you aim to accumulate X amount of gold and silver every year? I'm saving all I can and might be able to buy 2 ounces of gold. Thanks, Jack. Look, I used to set my goals in ounces, and that was kind of how I rolled. But that was back when the price of the ounce didn't swing freaking $15 in a day. And I'm talking about silver, not gold. So if your goal is in ounces, it's probably time to take a hard look at restating those goals and probably measuring them more in nominal terms, because you're going to bankrupt yourself if you try to stick to your ounce goals that you set 2 years ago. It's not going to work. All right. Be careful, guys. Stay liquid. All right. One mistake a lot of new stackers make is they spend everything they have. My dollars are going to be worthless. Spend every dollar I have on gold and silver, eating the premiums, and then, oh, crap, my car broke down, or, oh, crap, my roof is leaking. I need 20 grand for a new car, or I need 20 grand to fix my roof or to replace my roof. Now I'm forced to go sell my gold and silver that I just bought, and I'm eating another premium on the way out, and that's even if the spot price didn't move at all. So be careful. Don't zero yourself out putting everything you have into gold or silver. Keep some liquid cash nearby on hand so that you can eat those unforeseen expenses, which have a habit of showing up at the worst possible time. I used to set my goals in ounces, and I'm having to restate that because it's just not reasonable with what the prices have done. Good question, sir. By the way, metals, let's just see real quick. I'm going to check in on metals because they were quiet yesterday and now they're noisy today. All right, metals 8350 for silver, 5000 and change, 5050 for gold. Metals are a little quiet here. The market is starting to settle down just a little bit. So it looks like the initial reaction for the market is holding here. It's going to be probably a noisy day, guys. The market's going to have time to digest these jobs numbers, and then we'll see where we go. We'll see where we close at. But in the meantime, I just want to say thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button. You new guys, hit that subscribe button too, so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with us, Melonheads. Thank you so much for the super chats and the generous support of the channel, as well as you magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.